I say it's great to be here today to speak with you as Australia's Minister for Ageing about the government's national ageing initiatives and the impact they'll have on our population and indeed the health system as a whole. So given today's topic that we have, can I start by saying that of course the majority of older people who are in hospital are there because of an injury or an illness. That is, they're in hospital because they need to be. And like all of us, older people hope that a hospital stay will see them returned to health, and after that stay, they want to return to their own homes and remain as independent as possible. And that said, the Productivity Commission 2008 report on government services found that almost 20% of frail older people waited in hospital for more than 35 days before they received appropriate aged care services. And in June 2007, the Caring for Our Health, a report by state and territory health ministers, stated that in August 2006, there were about 2,300 older people in public hospitals who should have actually been in an aged care facility. And the Productivity Commission report further found the average cost of a hospital bed to the states and territories was $1,117 a day, while the average cost to the Commonwealth of an aged care bed was about $100 a day. So what this means is that in a single year it cost $937 million to accommodate 2,300 frail older people who are in hospital on any one night. But it would only cost $83 million to provide more appropriate aged care services. And this is a cost shift to the state health system of $854 million. So it's statistics like these that demonstrate the previous government could have done more to provide care outside of hospital for our older Australians. So not only is there a group of frail older people not receiving appropriate care services, there is also the fact that much needed hospital beds are unavailable to Australians of all ages waiting for surgery or medical treatment. A quick glance at the huge demographic shifts on the horizon demonstrates that this government is indeed going to have to work hard and work quickly to meet the challenges that Australia's ageing population presents. Now, we all know that our population is getting older, and indeed we now have the world's second longest life expectancy after the Japanese. And in fact, women in the agricultural wheat belt of Western Australia and also Queensland's Sunshine Coast have one of the longest life expectancy rates in the world, which is wonderful. And today around 9% of our population is aged 70 years or older, and that's some 2 million people. And this is expected to rise to 13% by 2021 and to 20% by 2051, a rise to about 5.7 million people. And people aged 80 years and over currently make up around 4% of the population, and this is expected to increase to 10% by 2051. But of course the fastest growing group is people in the age group 100 years and over. Currently there are nearly 3,000 people that are 100 years and over, but this number is expected to increase to 78,000 by the year 2055, a truly remarkable statistic. And indeed, their numbers, those 100 years and over, have increased by 8.5% over the past 25 years. And Australians will also see thousands of these centenarians and even more people reaching 110, a new ageing demographic known as the super centenarians. And also a very positive fact is that Australian women in 2060 can expect to live on average to 90 years of age. But of course, this is not just happening within Australia, this is indeed a worldwide phenomenon. And just on a lighter note, can I point out to everyone here that last week the Rolling Stones frontman Mick Jagger officially reached retirement age, and he's now eligible for a UK pension. And also soon, many of you will remember Roger Waters, the frontman for Pink Floyd, who wrote the Rebel Anthem, Another Brick in the Wall. Well, he's hitting retirement age too. So some interesting facts there. So in Australia and around the world, it's going to be very common to see people living more than 30 years beyond the traditional retirement age. And of course we know this can be attributed to many medical advances and many active healthy lifestyles that people are continuing to lead. And we look at some of the countries around the world. Countries such as Turkey and Holland are currently examining their retirement age as well. And just for the record, we have no plans to change that in Australia, but it's always interesting to see what other countries are doing. Another country I'd like to speak about too is the United States, which of course is facing very similar issues to us. Now, Medicaid in the United States, of which 70% is spent on the elderly, is the largest single expenditure in 22 out of 50 US states. And in New York State, Medicaid accounts for 29.2% of the entire state budget, and in Tennessee, it is 35.7%. And the reason I highlight the American situation, because services to the elderly is indeed a global issue. Also, if we look at China, as of December 2007, China has had 153 million people aged 60 and over, accounting for 11.6% of the country's 1.3 billion people. And in China, in March this year, there was low-level debate on whether to change the one-child policy, which of course, as we know, is a central tenet of Chinese social policy. Ultimately, of course, China rejected changing it, but like us, Chinese legislators are grappling with longer life expectancy and the challenge of a single child supporting two parents or four grandparents sometimes in retirement. And in India, for the first time, the federal government in this year's budget announced a policy to meet their ageing population. And of course, previously looking after the elderly in India was the responsibility of individual families. But this has changed with a declining birth rate, a very highly mobile population, and of course migration. And indeed in Italy, its population is actually contracting with its low birth rate. So what does all this mean for Australia in terms of economic impact? Well, in absolute terms, the number of people aged at least 70 will double in the next 20 years, and inevitably this will lead to increased demand for support services and care for the elderly. And the National Centre for Social and Economic Modelling has predicted that there will be a 160% increase in the number of older people needing care over the 30 years from 2001 to 2031. As a result, there will need to be increased investment in the construction of aged care facilities and also in home and community care. And currently, aged care accounts for about 5% of all non-residential construction, and this share is projected to double over the next 40 years. There will also be an increased workforce requirement. Currently, the aged care sector employs about 2% of the workforce. This share will also double over the next 40 years. And by 2050, 1 in 25 workers will be employed in the provision of aged care. However, population ageing is not just about the absolute growth in the number of older people. Indeed, most of the pressures of an ageing population are driven by the relative growth of the older population as compared to the working age population. As a result of this higher relative growth rate, the over 65s will represent more than a quarter of Australia's population in 2051, up from just 13% in the last census. Of course, this will have significant implications for the ability of the government to meet the increased needs that I've already spoken about earlier. And put simply, there will be relatively fewer taxpayers to support the provision of care. Currently, there are 16.3 people of working age for every person aged over 80. By 2050, this ratio will have dropped to 5.5 people of working age for every person aged over 80. So as a result of both the absolute increase in the number of older people and the relative increase as well, aged care will increasingly draw on the nation's income. And currently, 1.2% of gross national income is spent on aged care, and this is projected to grow to 3% by 2050. Under current policy settings, the share of Commonwealth revenues that may need to be spent on aged care will also increase significantly. Currently, the Commonwealth spends about 3% of revenues on aged care. By 2050, with policy changes, this share will have tripled to about 9%. And the Intergenerational Report too projects that Australian government spending on aged care will increase from 0.8% in 2006-07 to 2% in 2046-47. and on residential aged care will increase from 0.6% in 2006-07 to 1.5% in 2046-47. However, the Intergenerational Report assumes that there will be no improvement in age-specific rates of severe disability. It makes it clear that this assumption increases projected costs by about 0.2% of GDP over four decades. That is, the Intergenerational Report is a worst-case scenario. But it's not all bad news at all. To start with, for the record, since when did long life expectancy become a bad thing? Since when can we not look at it as an opportunity to embrace? I'm sure that everyone in the room here would agree today that we would all desire to live as long as possible. And it's also important to recall that economies, as we know, are always restructuring, changing and responding to that change. If we look at today's communication industry, it accounts for 2.7% of Australia's gross domestic product. 30 years ago, that share was 0.8%, and of course, a century ago, it would have been practically zero. So as far as the Australian economy is concerned, the adjustment required to meet the aged care needs of the ageing population is indeed no greater than has occurred over the last 30 years to meet the increased need for communication services. So the issue for any government is to ensure we have plans in place to be able to meet the challenges of these adjustments. We also need to remember that while we may not see the solution, we should not doubt the market, albeit with strong government safety nets, is capable of responding to challenges like this. And if I can just quote you that very famously wrong prediction by Western Union in 1876 when they said that the telephone has too many shortcomings to be seriously considered as a means of communication. Now we know how foolish that sounds now, but we can also see how we can respond to change in changing circumstances. So how then is the aged care industry placed to respond to all these challenges ahead? And what can the government be doing to assist with all these challenges? As we know, currently aged care is one of the most heavily regulated sectors of the economy. Supply is capped, providers must be approved by the government, eligibility for care is independently assessed, subsidies are targeted, prices are controlled, and there are mandatory quality standards and services for buildings. And we're always listening to residents and their families, providers, staff and unions, and other key stakeholders on ways that we can always improve the system. One very important role the government can play is to improve efficiency across the entire health and aged care system. The Commonwealth is currently working with the states and territories through the COAG process to address this issue by a range of measures, including better links between aged care homes and hospitals, and better information exchange as well. Also by averting avoidable admissions, and also ensuring that older people receive appropriate subacute care before discharge to aged care. And also case mix activity-based payments, including extension to subacute and non-acute care, and also in the area of workforce planning as well. Again, before I talk more specifically about our plans for aged care, let me just discuss where the system currently stands at the moment. We presently have 170,000 residents in almost 3,000 nursing homes nationwide. And for the 2006-07 year, just over 55,000 people received care through a community care package, either a community aged care package or extended aged care at home package, or extended aged care at home dementia package. Now that number, this is the equivalent to 2.9% of all people aged 70 years and over. And a further 8,800 people received residential respite care, and 6,500 people received care under the transition care program. And here in Western Australia, there are currently 97 approved providers managing 252 operational residential aged care services, providing care to more than 13,400 residents. And the number of providers in Western Australia is around 8% of the national amount. And the share of for-profit residential services in Western Australia is the second highest in Australia behind Victoria. And around 29% of aged care homes belong to the for-profit sector, compared with the national average of some 28%. Over the 10 years to June 2007, Western Australian aged care providers received a cumulative total of about $3.5 billion in residential care subsidy payments. Over the next 5 years, from 2007-08 to 2011-12, cumulative total payments to Western Australia will be about $2.9 billion. Over the next 4 years, from 2008-09 to 2011-12, total Commonwealth subsidy payments to Western Australia will be about $2.4 billion. And in 2008-09 alone, Western Australian aged care providers will receive about $547 million, which represents an increase of around 6.3% in the payment per resident compared to 2007-08. I also understand that when it comes to aged care provision in Western Australia, there are some very unique circumstances, some of those being land and building costs and also workforce issues as well. And I've met many of the organisations here and spoken with them about their concerns and appreciate that they've raised them on a number of occasions with me, and I do very much understand the unique circumstances that exist here. So now on to some of our plans. The government's committed to improving the aged care system to ensure that it better meets the needs of older Australians. And over the next 4 years, the Rudd Labor government will invest $40 billion in the aged care in this country. That's $28.6 billion into residential care alone. And there are 5 points in particular that I'd like to draw your attention to in relation to our plans. First of all, reviewing the planning and allocation of aged care places. Secondly, providing the necessary funding. Thirdly, increased quality and protection for residents. Also, expanding community care and increasing the connection between the hospital and the aged care system. And fifthly, attracting a sustainable, skilled workforce. Firstly, reviewing the planning and allocation process. Now, the current aged care planning ratios have not been comprehensively reviewed since they were first introduced in 1985, with some ad hoc adjustments being made over time. Since the ratios were established, there have been significant demographic changes and changing patterns of use in aged care services. And that's why it's time for the government to review the ratio of aged care places available for the population of older Australians to ensure the supply of aged care places meets current and future demands. The reviews will take into account demographic changes and changing patterns of use of aged care services and the need also for culturally appropriate care, and to ensure there's a much better match between demand for aged care and the supply of places into the future. The first review will commence this year and will also include a process for public consultations. Also, in terms of the review of planning and allocation process, the government's committed to making the aged care bed allocation process more efficient by ensuring that the time between the allocation of residential aged care beds and those beds actually becoming operational is to be kept at a minimum. This review also will include a public consultation phase. We're also committed to more aged care places in areas of need, particularly through our zero interest loans. And the government recently called for applications, and we released the timetable for stage one of our election commitment to provide $300 million in zero real interest loans to build or expand aged care homes in areas that need them most. And this innovative plan is expected to create 2,500 permanent residential aged care places in regional and undersupplied areas. And the applications closed on June the 6th, and I'm very pleased to announce that 115 applications were submitted in that first round. And the announcement of the loans and places will take place shortly. After this first round, we'll be reviewing it and seeing what improvements can be made to this whole process prior to the announcement of the second round. Also, secondly, when it comes to providing the necessary funding. As we know, very simply, without the money, we can't hope to meet the future demands of our ageing population. And with this in mind, as I mentioned earlier, that the government's commitment for funding aged and community care will reach record levels of $40 billion over the next 4 years. And indeed, no other Australian government in history has made this level of commitment to aged care. And this is being achieved through three main measures: raising the conditional adjustment payment, changes to the accommodation payments and subsidies, and the aged care funding instrument. In fact, since March, this government has overseen changes worth more than $1.5 billion of additional funding for the aged care sector. With such a vast investment in ageing community care, it's essential that we listen to our aged care providers and that we act on what we hear. We've increased the level of the conditional adjustment payment by 1.75% from 7 to 8.75% of the basic aged care subsidies. And this will give an additional $407.6 million over 4 years for investment in the aged care sector and brings total cap payments over the next 4 years to $2 billion. Of course, the government will review the cap by the end of October this year and will be working very closely with the industry during this review. And this increase in funding is in addition to annual indexation of the subsidy. And of course, it's conditional on providers making audited financial statements publicly available, participating in periodic workforce census and encouraging staff training. This additional funding will contribute to maintaining the financial viability of our aged care providers. And now to the Aged Care Funding Instrument, or ACFI. The new instrument, which was introduced in March 2008, determines the level of care payments for residents in aged care homes. It is simpler, with fewer basic funding categories, and two new supplements that will ensure funding is better matched to people with dementia and those with complex healthcare needs. It's also aimed at reducing the time spent by aged care homes in assessing residents for the purposes of funding and to ensure aged care providers are being correctly funded to meet the needs of their residents. The government will temporarily increase the number of reviews of funding claims made by aged care providers, achieving expected net savings of $18 million over 2 years. And indeed, the government is committed to reviewing the full impact of ACFI after 18 months. Also, changes to the accommodation payments and subsidies. And overall, the increase in accommodation payments and care subsidies introduced in March this year will deliver additional revenue of $1.13 billion to residential care providers over 4 years, rising to more than $350 million per year after that. And that comes from both government and resident payments. So what does all this mean? Overall, in 2008-09, government funding for each day a resident spends in residential care will be about 8% more than it was in 2007-08 for a resident of the same level of frailty. And thirdly, increased quality and protection for residents. The standards of care for older Australians in aged care homes will continue to be improved in consultation with the industry. And indeed, while the overwhelming majority of aged care providers are giving top quality care to Australians, I certainly have visited aged care facilities in all states throughout this country and territories and seen some world-class facilities. But I'm sure we all agree that there are always some areas where improvements can be made across the sector. And during the next financial year, the Aged Care Standards and Accreditation Agency will be making 7,000 announced and unannounced visits to aged care homes across the nation. Other measures that we've introduced include expanding the requirement for staff to undergo police checks, new protocols and guidelines on gastroenteritis outbreaks in nursing homes, strengthening the powers of the Aged Care Standards and Accreditation Agency, and also requiring departmental clinical staff to check on residents as part of their investigations. My primary concern is always for the welfare and care of residents. And I'm sure that we'll all see the benefits of a much more transparent and accountable system that works to protect those residents. And now fourthly, expanding community care and increasing the connection between the hospital and aged care sectors. As I said earlier, I'm sure that we would all aspire to remain as independent as possible as we grow older. And we all want to be able to stay connected to our families and our communities. And that's when community care becomes so vitally important. And currently, around 600,000 older Australians and their carers receive community aged care services through a mix of programs funded by Commonwealth and state and territory governments. And announced in the budget, Australian government funding for community care services will total $2.2 billion in 2008-09, an increase of $260 million compared to the previous year. and Home and Community Care will receive over $1.7 billion in funding from the Commonwealth, State and Territory governments for 2008-09, with the Australian Government providing 60%, or just over $1 billion in total program funding. And this is an increase of 7% from the previous year. And of course, whilst the growth of the community care sector means that it's able to meet the needs of more people, we all know that it has also resulted in a system that's very unnecessarily complex and indeed somewhat fragmented. Our goal is for a simpler and much fairer community care system, a system that's much, much better able to meet the needs of frail older Australians. And as you know, the Commonwealth, State and Territory governments have been working to improve cross-program administrative arrangements. We've seen the establishment of access point demonstration sites across Australia designed to streamline entry into the system for older Australians and also for their carers, and also to ensure a really consistent approach to the assessment as well. And indeed, we are working in partnership with the states and territories through the Council of Australian Governments. And the work plan for the Council of Australian Governments Health and Ageing Workgroup includes a focus on increasing and reforming community-based care, focusing on opportunities for more seamless delivery and the intersection between aged care funding, HAC, and disability funding. The government's also investing $293.2 million to the Transition Care Program, a program which helps older Australians recover and regain their independence before they make any decisions about their longer-term care needs. And this program will fund 2,000 transition care places for older Australians, increasing the number of transition care places to 4,000. Unlike the existing 2,000 places, these additional 2,000 places are fully funded by the Commonwealth. And this means that when all 4,000 places are fully operational, this will help up to 30,000 older Australians leaving hospital each year. And of course, transition care provides older people with a package of services that includes low-intensity therapies, such as sometimes physiotherapy or occupational therapy. And of course, it also provides nursing support and personal care. And transition care has proven to be successful in enabling a significant proportion of care residents to return home after hospital, rather than entering residential care prematurely. And of course, this is better for the older person and it also reduces the pressure on the aged care system. And the program has recently been evaluated and the initial findings are very encouraging. People receiving transitional care have experienced many functional improvements when compared with similar groups of frail older people discharged from hospital during the same time period. Those who received transition care had fewer readmissions to hospital and were less likely to move into permanent residential aged care. And finally, we're very committed in terms of strengthening the aged care workforce. Whilst we understand it's important to increase the number of aged and community care places that are available in this country, all the new places in the world won't make any difference without a very skilled and dedicated workforce to care for the additional residents. And as we are all aware, there is a general shortage of qualified nurses across Australia and indeed internationally. And with an ageing population, workforce participation will be a key driver of long-term economic growth. For this reason, the need to keep mature age Australians in the workforce longer has indeed been stressed many times by the Prime Minister. And we also need to encourage mature age Australians by providing them with flexibility, sometimes part-time options, and also we have to be combating discrimination against mature age workers. We've already committed to many on-the-ground solutions to ensure that the aged care sector is having increases in staffing, and that the workforce has better access to training. We want to ensure that staff have a very clear career path and encourage them to stay in the sector long term. Indeed, our election commitments, bringing nurses back into the workforce program, is a $39.4 million measure to bring 8,750 extra nurses into the Australian health workforce within 5 years. And this plan includes $6.9 million to bring 1,000 nurses into residential aged care. And there are approximately 30,000 qualified nurses in Australia who are currently outside the nursing workforce, including, of course, thousands of aged care nurses. and the program will provide a cash bonus to nurses who are returning to the profession after an absence of more than 12 months. The cash bonus will be paid in two instalments of $3,000. The first payment made after six months of employment, and the second after 18 months of employment. And also, aged care homes employing these nurses will be paid $1,000 per nurse to assist with retraining costs. And of course, training is a key factor to attracting and retaining staff and giving them options to develop a career path in the industry. And to this end, the Rudd Government will invest in up to 50,000 additional health vocational training places. We'll also be creating 90 new Commonwealth-supported places in nursing in the second semester of 2008, with a further 1,170 places in 2009. I'm also committed to examining staffing levels in nursing homes based on the care needs of residents, and this will happen after the impact of the new aged care funding instrument on aged care financing is fully understood and the review has occurred. And of course, since this obviously will have effect on approved providers and residents and families and staff and unions, we'll be talking to all those groups and consulting with them in relation to this. I'd also like to mention the recent establishment of the Ministerial Conference on Ageing. And I'm sure that Jim McGuinty, who with his ministerial responsibilities for aged care and is also a member of this conference, will join me in noting the importance of this body. The Ministerial Conference will facilitate consultation and cooperation between the Commonwealth and the states and territories and help initiate, develop and monitor policy reform and also agree to joint action in the resolution of issues that arise between governments. And the very first meeting, the first time we had a Ministerial Conference on Ageing, was held in June, and the next meeting is to be held in Victoria in November. And also the Council of Australian Governments has committed to reform by establishing both the Health and Ageing Working Group, chaired by Minister Roxon, and the National Health and Hospitals Reform Commission as well. And the government has asked this commission to report by June 2009 on what more might be done to better integrate acute services and aged care services and improve the transition between hospital and aged care. So, in conclusion, I think what I'd like to say predominantly is that no, I don't believe the situation is as dire as what we hear in the media. However, the government certainly acknowledges the work that needs to be done, particularly to meet the very, very diverse needs of our ageing population. And indeed, for our part, the Australian government is investing more money and new ideas than ever before for our nation's aged care sector. And we'll continue to work with state and territory counterparts, as well as the business sector and aged care providers, to meet the many challenges ahead that we have with our ageing population. And of course, Australia's aged and community care system is underpinned also by our system of aged pensions, our compulsory super system put in place by the Hawke and Keating governments, and of course, individual savings as well. And indeed, the Rudd government is committed to tackling the many challenges of our ageing population across many portfolios, with, of course, action focused on building opportunities for older Australians to work, also encouraging greater personal saving and more retirement planning as well, lifting and improving the range of aged service options and refocusing our health system towards preventative health. So we certainly have a whole of government approach in terms of the many, many challenges ahead. Well, I thank you very much for inviting me today to speak about some of our plans for the future. It is a real challenge. There are many opportunities ahead, which are great. Thank you. Minister.